και λίγο τάφτε, ενώ πρέπει να βάλαμε ένα για κάμερα στο τονουάρι.
Thank you. Thank you, Jefferson. I just want to make sure whether the advertisement to call on stakeholders has gone out in other languages as well, in the particular provinces that it do have preference. And then also maybe just to highlight that when the public hearings come, that we ensure that there will be proper translation taking place in all the languages. I think we need to set the example as that is part of our main mandate. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Duncan. I guess it was an input because I never thought of that on other languages, but also the translations as well. Is there any other issue? That means this is what we must change on the advert. But are you happy with the advert on its own?
I'm happy with the content of the excerpt, but I want to speak towards the media side, which media we will use to put in the excerpt for the public. Because local newspapers, what type of newspapers will we leave it in the prerogative of the chairperson then to look in with radio stations and those people and local newspapers they use in different provinces.
I'm asking for Faith because she must come on board on this issue, especially even to the most local newspapers, because you see, we always say that certain people don't participate in this process because, but it's because they are not aware. Newspapers and radio stations, it's all less, all these people that I know, they're also African newspapers, they're also Namambondo, they're all these. I guess one of the issues that we must do now is just to draw even all stakeholders, because those who don't even have access to a mere newspaper, I think that's where those house of traditions can also assist us on those issues. I think that's one of the suggestions I'd also like to bring to my house, to their house. Is there any other issue on the
Chairperson, yes. It is specifically, the invitation is going out specifically for arts and culture and language stakeholders. We must also leave it open for the public at large. Because in most of the public hearings I've been, you get those individuals that also have valuable input that we don't, you know, seem to only focus on arts and culture and language and stakeholders. But further, I don't have a problem. I'm just maybe stating that as a point. Thank you.
No, you are correct, actually. Because I already have submissions from Advocate Lawrence. And as an individual, you know, those are some of the issues that you must. I am not sure whether we should decide here or we should just decide, maybe the men could decide on also the provinces to target also when we do this language thing. Because but I know I'm from Gauteng, but I don't usually target Gauteng more than any other provinces. So those are some of the issues that are just coming to my mind. I'm not sure whether you want us to speak about the provinces now or do you want us to, as we plan, to suggest to us. Because what is the target? Because we must also agree on the target of provinces that we have to attend to. Yeah, because we should have a target. And January, that means we won't be sleeping.
I want to suggest that the Premier's offices in the province are the highest authority. So maybe to send it to them for their attention. However, making sure that they do filter it down to the departments of usually at province level, it is not necessarily arts and culture, it is sport might be added to it. But that it is then seen from their office, making sure that we get our premiers to interact, be part of the public hearing, and then also the specific departments within that province. It is just an idea.
Sure, I would also suggest perhaps that we, even though they are reasonably dysfunctional at this point, but that we do send it to the provincial offices of PANSELP.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have contacts in the language field and they deal with complaints, etc.
Okay. about non-government organization? What is non-governmental NGOs? Okay, we must check who I am because you must check them. Don't speak out. All of them. I'll speak out loud, shut up, all of them. Some of them are protest, so I don't know which is which. And political organizations, as we are represented here. Because what I've seen in most of the public hearings, our political organizations, all of them, mostly, they don't attend to these issues. Honorable, most of hands was up.
Yes, I also think that we must maybe checking on the data of maybe in the speaker's office, if you talk about those stakeholders in our provinces, and also maybe check with the NCOP because they are the most maybe house who going to oversight in the different provinces when they take parliament to the people, when they invite those stakeholders to their. But I also maybe just want to check because we raise a lot of suggestions and proposals in this meeting. I just want to check is the budget enough for this on the issue when it comes to funding. Because if you talk about experts and those stuff in radio stations, then I just want to check because we must make sure that our house is ready in action.
No. Yes, Honorable Moss, the last time I checked, we had about 450,000 in our budget. So I would suppose that would suffice for Edward.
No, but that will finish our budget. I'm confused. But what we can do, what we can also do, maybe to just ask for assistance, also we must create our relations now with our stakeholders to also assist us on this issue. What we must do, we also speak to a couple of CEOs, like the, what is it, heritage, what's national heritage? I mean, heritage is our language, our heritage, we'll see how they assist us, and all these other stakeholders, and even the provincial embassies and premiers, as honorable, Duncan and such as that, so that it goes beyond, because they must also assist us with the cost as well, because this is not a national, it's a national priority. This is one of the challenges they are also facing. So it must not just be our issue. I think if you can just leave it to us to also to write to them, so that they can also do their targeting in their markets in the province. The reason that we call to face because of the bill, we are saying that usually, because you are the media guys, you would know beyond what we know. In such instances, the major newspapers are usually used, and it doesn't go to even if it was still a national newspaper, it doesn't go to a local newspaper. I don't even know any local newspaper around Cape Town, to be honest. So we want to reach to that level, even beyond. So if you access even radio stations as well.
Oh, Chairperson, we were actually talking about that with Kagiso, that in our unit, we've got multimedia unit that has a contract with SABC radio program, but I think it's ending in December for vernacular languages like for radio stations that use vernacular languages. So we could try, and I think they give us 10 minutes slots. Mm-hmm. We will try and inquire from the multimedia manager that if we could use that platform as well, because she said that she still has until December. So maybe she could give us that platform that we to publicize the public hearings. But then we only have until December. So from next year, it's something else.
Then. Duncan?
Chairperson, thank you. I already mentioned it in our previous meeting that I do think that as chairperson and some of the committee members that we really look at television and have a media session there during this period. I think it will put us at the level where we are supposed to be. With regard to language, that the nation can hear what we say, that is only read what we say. So I do recommend that we look at that and nominate persons within the committee to be there with you to announce it or to make or to tell the nation what is happening. Then, secondly, I want to say our member Linda Moss is always very focused on local government and the people. Especially in our rural areas. Therefore, it will also be important that we include the mayors to inform them about the public hearings, so that they can ensure that the NGOs and the CBOs are actually informed, so they can also play their role from a municipal level. Thank you.
Okay, if you allow me, because over the last 10 we don't know those people mattering outside. What I will do, I will also try and maybe early next year, well, not even early next year, maybe in this week, meet the other chairs who might be involved, like the House of Local Government. Canada is not chairperson, which is like the deputy. Oh, there is a new chairperson now. Oh, internet. So I'll try and meet also those chairpersons who are more leaning towards we as the bill was saying. And but now you have to assist me because the bill has got interest. I'm not the only one who's going to be going on television and what do you call the other one. So if I call you Mom Sweet against you, deal with who calls, you must be ready. If I say on a lot threat, deal with this station. So I think we'll have a shared responsibility because I'm not saying I don't want to shine, but it must not be like only the chairs was this. It must not be my responsibility only to go to the meeting. So we must share that responsibility. So it will be. So when I call you and say, after 10 minutes, this radio station is yours, let's all be part of it, you know. But the other issue that I wanted to raise, I won't be here next week. I think you can just say this off the record. The department now will come and present, will do the usual, but those who are here are not going to participate. They're just watching, because public hearings are only next year.
Mine is to just double check whether we are correct with the dates, you know, reflected on the board, and still see 2011, and unless something has been done. If you look at your correct those first page and second page, if you need to correct them, correct them.
I think it's only allowed 2011, because it will be 2012, the most interesting year for the ANC, so. No, you're putting 2011, even mine. Yeah, some of it is 2011. Okay, so I think the only suggestion that we'll require before the end of the week is that members must also suggest which provinces do we target and areas also to target. Please don't target your hometown, just target. Linda, you have to
come to the last 2 weeks that we were allocated for the study to Malaysia. If we want to check what will we do in this week, but now you touched on it for the oversight. For the oversight work, I think I suggest that we look in the previous portfolio committee where we suggest that we do oversight to those entities that we were not happy with, and make example of the downtown studios and also the Fort Trekker Monument and the Albert Tully Museum, and that was the one we was parking because we didn't have proper time to do the oversight in Durban. So I think in KwaZulu-Natal, I think chairperson, we must maybe look to those Muslim entities. Thank you very much.
Okay, I think that's a good suggestion. I will, Johnny will do something today, but I'll also speak to another floor because we can't just be sitting. So we can do the first state and KwaZulu-Natal. And we'll see what will come about. I think we'll do it today, immediately, then submit it to the House, because we can't just sit and say nothing has been done. Okay. Are you happy? Okay, thank you. Ezra and Bukin, how are you? Thank you. I believe she is here, so you can grab your cup and whatever you need to grab tea, except there's no whiskey and something else, just drink coffee. members, am I the only person who's deprived food here? Morning, everyone, to the honorable members, morning to the department as well. My name is Tandile Babalwa Sunduzo. I'm the chairperson of this committee. So it was my birthday yesterday, so all of you must sing. I won't tell you my age because they say the woman doesn't reveal her age. With all our guests that are here, it's our culture in this committee, because the Arts and Culture Committee, that we must introduce each other and know who is who, just on the basis of Ubuntu, as we cohere. As I said, my name is Tandile Sunduzo. I'm single with no children. And next to me is Johnny van der Westhuizen, who's our committee secretary. I'll introduce the honorable members. Members can just wave your hand if you are just introducing. On my left is Honorable Linda Moss. She's the whip of this committee. She's a member of the ANC. Next to her is Honorable Lishiva, who's a member of this committee, who's a member of the ANC. Next to her, again, is Honorable Mshwana, who is a member of this committee and a member of the ANC. Okay. And then next to her is Honorable Lotrick, who's a member of this committee and member of the DA. Next to her is Honorable Duncan, who's a member of this committee and a member of the DA. At the back there, you've got Honorable Chikela, who's a member of this committee and is a member of COPE. And then you have Honorable Mabunda, who's a member of this committee and member of the ANC. At the back there, you've got Honorable Msweli, who's a member of this committee and who's a member of the Inkatha Freedom Party. And then you have Vera Magadana, who is the chair of this committee. Then you have Faith at the back there, Faith Kwanza, who is our media person. You have Kahisho Vamabolo, who's also our media person in this committee. Then you have Busha. Who is Busha? Oh, she's outside. And then next to me, you have the department. DG, would introduce. Oh, before that, you have. Then here with us, we've got our legal team from Parliament. We have our parliamentary legal officer, Ms. Barbara Lutz. Then you have Advocate Soraya Adnikari. Okay. Our chief parliamentary legal advisor. Then you have the Office of the Speaker, IOSD. Oh, okay. Who's here as well. And who did I leave out? DG, can you introduce your team, please?
Thanks, Chair. My name is Musiso Baba from the Department of Arts and Culture. I'm here with Ms. Khanedi, Masiapo Khanedi, who is the legal advisor for the minister. Mr. Anil Singh, who is the head of legal services in the department, if you can raise your hand, Anil. Ms. Koketso Dagedi, who is in the teacher's office in special programs. Ms. Lisa Komring, who is the head of communications in the department. Dr. Joyce Sugumani. I can't see her from here. Why is that?
Why are you
coming
to the bank?
Come closer.
Why are people sitting
here? Come and sit here. Mr. Tomeka Zikasamba, who is the parliamentary officer for the deputy minister, and Mr. Lodvig Ranebibi, who is the parliamentary officer for the DG.
Thank you, DG. I know you've got a lot of observers, guests today. Just stand and say who you are on which organization so that we can know who is here. That's Ubuntu Org. I'll start here. I know it's a long list, but just quickly.
Thank you. My name is Sello Ntema, and I'm a legislative language practitioner from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor.
My name is Yolanda Levesi. I'm also a legislative language practitioner from the Chief State.
state law advisor.
My name is Nemtampani Moraro Edward. So from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, I'm working as a legislative language practitioner.
My name is Teniko Mabasa. I'm a legislative language practitioner from the Department of, from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor.
Good morning, I'm Amalia, sir. I'm from OISC. Speak it up.
Okay. At the back there.
My name is Malusi Ngolo. I'm the Senior State Law Advisor from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor.
Okay. Are there any members of the media? Okay.
I'm Paula Isis from the Burgers.
Okay. I see there's pencil with a book, no? Oh. Don't be shy to introduce who you are. We must know who it is.
Good morning. Jane Stierman Moleleki, Department of Cultural Affairs in the Western.
Okay.
I'm Biola Stofile from the Department of Cultural Affairs in Sport.
Okay.
I'm Arlene Rose from the Language Unit at the Provincial Department of Cultural Affairs and Sport.
Good morning, I'm Nopulinda Janki from Economic Development and Tourism.
Ann Taylor from the Professional Editors Group.
Elise Engelberg, City of Cape Town. I'm Zaman Dove, intern at the Legal Services Office.
Swanson Twiler, intern at Parliament's Legal Services Office.
Courtney van Rensburg, Department of the Premier.
My name is Lwani Lemaswana, I'm from Penza.
Dina Das, Provincial Department of Health.
Is there any other person that I'm missing? Okay, where's Bush? Oh, should we? Okay, as you all know today that we have a briefing by the department on the bill, the South African Languages Bill, which has been tabled in Parliament as B23 for 2011. As you all know that part of the background the DG is going to present, but part of that is something that has been on the public as well, to say that we have until the 15th of March to finish with this bill. But before I make any comments, I think DG already. Okay. I will not make any preambles. I'll just say welcome to all to the meeting. As you all know, that is only a briefing by the department, so there won't be any participation from any other person, only the honorable members of parliament. It's good just to observe. And then we'll start having our public hearings. We will announce the date and everything else. I thought I should just make that one clear. Right now, Mr. Kaza, we'll give over to you.
Chair, thank you. Thanks to the honourable members.
So anyone from PMG? Oh, okay. Okay. And your name is it?
Hi, I'm Tiffany Mugu. I'm from PMG.
Okay, PMG is our financial monitoring group, so that you don't sue us and say we said anything that we didn't say. So everything is recorded. Whatever you say, it's recorded there. So you must be careful with your mics open. Keep them off. Don't say things that we can hear from here.
Okay.
So
alright. Thanks, Chair. Thanks to the honourable members for the opportunity to brief the committee on the South African Languages Bill. By way of background, Chair, this bill responds to a section in the Constitution, a requirement in the Constitution which is captured in Section 6 of the Constitution, which provides for establishment and the protection of languages. And essentially, what Section 6 does, it establishes 11 official languages for the country. And then it obligates the states to take practical and positive measures to elevate the status and advance the use of indigenous languages. And there are various ways in which that is done, and I'm not going to get into the detail of that. But then it says that all national and provincial governments must use at least two official languages for the purposes of government business, and it places an obligation on national and provincial governments to regulate the use of official languages through legislative and other measures. And I think this concept of legislative and other measures become an important sort of element of this, as we'll see as we go along. And there's an obligation on the Minister of Arts and Culture, which is derived from Section 6.4, which provides that the national government and provincial governments, by legislative and other measures, must regulate and monitor the use of official languages. And without detracting from the previous provisions of subsection 2, all official languages must enjoy parity of esteem and must be treated equitably. Now, the Minister of Arts and Culture therefore has a constitutional obligation to promulgate legislation to regulate and monitor the use of official languages by government for the purposes of government business, as well as implement other measures to regulate and monitor the use of official languages in government. And in 2003, the Cabinet approved the National Languages Policy Framework and its implementation plan. And part of the implementation plan was the promulgation of the South African Languages Act, which is going to regulate and monitor the use of official languages by government. In 2004, the department then submitted this bill to Cabinet, but the bill was not approved by Cabinet. In considering the bill, the draft bill, Cabinet requested the department to explore other alternative non-legislative measures to regulate and monitor the use of official languages. And in that regard, we've been working and consulting with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, as well as the Department of Basic Education and the Department of Health, in finding other non-regulatory measures to promote the use of official languages. And since that cabinet decision in 2004, the implementation plan of the National Languages Policy Framework provides for practical measures on the use of official languages by government and how these official languages can be regulated. And some of the measures that have been implemented by the department include consultation with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development on the promotion of multilingualism in the courts, the implementation of human language technology projects in conjunction with the Center for Scientific and Industrial Research. The department has also identified and outlined the nature and functions of structures responsible for promoting the use of official languages and the promotion of multilingualism. And such structures have been identified, including PANSALB, the Provincial Languages Committee, the National Lexicography Unit, as well as the Hansard. Other measures that have been implemented through the facilitation of terminology development, translation and editing, awareness campaigns, as well as language surveys. There are also other means, such as the Telephone Interpretation Service of South Africa and the terminology dictionaries that the department has been implementing since 2004. The reason, Chair, I thought it's important for us to go into this level of detail is because we have been responding to a decision that let's pursue non-legislative measures to promote the use of official languages as well as multilingualism. However, a certain Mr. Lawrence brought an application in the Northern Gauteng High Court to determine whether the national government has complied with its obligation in terms of Section 6.4 of the Constitution, which says through legislative and other measures, we should promote multilingualism. And secondly, sought that Parliament should be ordered to comply with certain language requirements. And in the main, Mr. Lawrence sought three forms of one is that the President of the Republic.
Can anyone help us? People are saying it's the light, they want to make it a bit dark. Who is familiar with that technology? Is that a bad thing? Is there any switch to authority? Hold on. Nothing. Sun switches off as well. Sun switches are light off. Fix, can you help us? Sorry about that, TJ. Are you? Oh, okay. This is still conscious. Okay, so we are just checking somebody in. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Now, Mr. Lawrence really was looking for three forms of relief with the courts. One is that the President of the Republic and the Ministers of Arts and Culture, and the Ministers of Arts and Culture, as well as Justice and Constitutional Development, be ordered to finalize and promulgate a National Language Act, which is required by Section 64 of the Constitution. That the President or the Minister should be ordered. Should order a language audit of national government departments, and thirdly, the Parliament be ordered to publish all legislation in all official languages retroactively to 1996. The court found that in terms of prayer one, which is which was the promulgation of the National Language Act, that while the adoption of a National Language Act is not a constitutional obligation. It, however, in the alternative, made an order that national government is failing to regulate and monitor through legislative and other means national government's use of official languages in terms of the Constitution. With Prayer 2, which deals with an audit, the court found that Mr. Lawrence did not show any constitutional provision which imposed an obligation on government to conduct an audit. And the court agreed with Mr. Lawrence with regards to Prayer 3, that statutes should be translated into all official languages, but found that there is no constitutional provision that imposes the translation obligation on Parliament. And to the extent that the court ordered the Minister of Arts and Culture to comply with the provisions of Section 6 of the Constitution, and it ordered that such an obligation should be complied with within 2 years from the date of order, which is going to be in March 2010. To this end, and to comply with the Constitution, the Department has drafted the National Languages Bill of 2010. And the provisions of the Languages Bill are outlined in the following slides. I think, Chair, perhaps it's important to point out the issue of time, because the 2 years from the date of the judgment is next year in March, the 18th of March next year. The 16th of March next year is the date by which is the time that the court had given us to get this work finalized. Mm-hmm. Now, what does the South African Languages Bill seek to do? It provides, firstly, for the regulation and monitoring of all official languages by government and for government purposes. The adoption of language policies by all departments and state institutions, as well as the establishment of and the functions of language units, and we'll get into a little bit of detail on these things. The object of the bill, as outlined in Section 2 of the bill, is number one, that there has to be a regulation and the monitoring of the use of official languages for purposes of government. Secondly, is to promote the parity of esteem and the equitable treatment of all official languages. And thirdly, is to facilitate the equitable access to services and information. And finally, to promote good language management by national government for efficient public services and administration. And here, I think there are three sort of key principles that are linked together by the objects of the Act. One is the promotion of the use of languages. Secondly, is the issue of access to information and access to services. And thirdly, is just good language management by national departments. And I think that really is the fundamental principle which I think we need to keep in mind as we go through the bill, that it's about promoting not just the use of languages for the sake of languages alone, but it's also about giving people better access to services and promoting efficiency in the public service and in administration. The application of the bill applies to all national departments, public entities, as well as national public enterprises. And I think this is quite a critical thing, because it's not just an obligation on the Department of Arts and Culture, it's an obligation to the entirety of government and state institutions. Section 4 provides that every national department, national public entity, as well as national enterprise, shall adopt a language policy within 18 months of the commencement of this Act, assuming that the Act would have been promulgated by March next year. Departments and entities and enterprises have 18 months within which they've got to adopt their language policies. And the policy must, amongst others, comply with the provisions of Section 63 of the Constitution, identify at least two official languages that the department or entity will use for the purposes of government, describe how members of the public can access such a policy, describe how the department or the entity will communicate with members of the public where their language of choice is not an official language of such department or entity. And the policy must be made available on request to members of the public, and a summary of such a policy must be displayed at all offices in such manner and place that it can be read by members of the public. Two critical things here. One is that there's got to be a choice has got to be made on the languages of business, and it's got to be at least two official languages. But over and above that, each entity and department will have to communicate how members of the public can use their language of choice, which one is not an official language of such an entity or a department, and how that is going to be regulated and used. Section 5 provides for the establishment of a national language unit in the Department of Arts and Culture, and obligates the minister to ensure that such a unit is adequately resourced for its effective functioning. Critical area, Chair, you would notice that the Act makes provision for two things. One is the National Language Unit, which is an obligation on the Department of Arts and Culture, but then each department has got to have its own language unit, and I think it's important to distinguish those, because the functions of the national language would include advising the minister on matters of policy and strategy to meet the constitutional obligations, liaise and coordinate the establishment and with the other language units which are established in terms of Section 7, to promote the parity of esteem and equitable treatment of all official languages, and promote good language management by departments and public entities. Now, those are the functions of the national language unit in the Department of Arts and Culture. Section 7 then provides for the establishment of language units in every national department, national public entity, as well as enterprises, and obligates such departments and entities to ensure that the unit is provided with personnel and administrative and other resources as may be necessary to perform its functions. Section 8 provides for the functioning of those language units in every department, and the functions include advising the responsible accounting officer and or accounting authority on the development, adoption, and implementation of the language policy, compiling of reports that are submitted to the minister in terms of the act, as well as promoting the parity of esteem and equitable treatment of the official languages. Section 9 deals with the responsibility of monitoring the use of official languages for government purposes on the Minister responsible for arts and culture, and provides for the submission of reports of by every national department and public entity and enterprises to the Minister for the purposes of monitoring. Section 10 then deals with the National Language Union as established in terms of Section 5, through which the Minister may, through the Minister, request Cabinet to intervene in cases where a particular department or entity does not comply with the provisions of this Act. And the Minister shall, in terms of Section 11, table a report on the status of the use of official languages for government purposes to Parliament on an annual basis. Section 12 then deals, provides that the Minister may establish an intergovernmental fora on the use of official languages to promote general coordination, cooperation, and consultation between the various departments and entities. And then Section 13 provides that any department or a listed public entity in terms of the PFMA may apply to be exempted from the application of Section 7 of the Act. Then Section 14 then provides that the Minister may, after consultation with PANSAL, make regulations that are not inconsistent with this Act, and those may provide for the form and content of language policies, time frames for the establishment of language units, form and content of reports to the Minister, as well as the form, time frames of submission of applications for exemptions as provided for in Section 12, and any other matter that the Minister may deem necessary for the implementation and the achievement of the objects of the Act. And Section 15 provides for the short title and the commencement date of the Act. Chair, that's basically the Act. I mean, obviously, we have not gone through a section-by-section reading of the Act, but we've just tried to highlight for the committee what the Act seeks to achieve and how we seek to do that in a way that meets the constitutional obligations within the time frames that we have been given. Thank you.
Thank you, ADG. Perfect. Can you bring us back to ESCOM? I hope nothing happened in the dark. So, okay. Yeah, now, remember, there's a presentation by the DG. We'll ask our questions and questions for clarity. DG, you're not supposed to respond where to. I think I'll go first this time to say that in which criteria will be used to identify the at least two languages of the national department, you know? A national entity or a national government to use for a government, but which language? Is it just an angel? You know, you can't compensate. You know, let's say for instance you have a province like Limpopo, which speaks more than three dominant languages. What would happen in such instances? You know. And what impact will it have on minority groups? I think on page 13. I'm sorry, I don't have my glasses, so I'm trying to look at what I've written. It's a babalas. But no, that not that kind of babalas. That's I didn't sleep. What criteria ministry likely to use on the establishment of the national language unit? I thought I should just go with those for now. Honourable members, honourable Lothric.
Thank you, Chair. I would just like to know the following and have clarity on that. In terms of this Act, well, at this point, are there any mechanisms to enforce compliance by the different departments? Because
because I get the sense when I read through it that, quite frankly, no one can do anything. There may be a request to the cabinet, but it's not compulsory. There's no indication of the enforcement of the stipulations in the Act. And then secondly, does it actually mean, if one reads Section 13, in terms of exemptions, that it can in reality occur that basically all departments are exempted, because it's very vague as to what the terms for exemption will be.
Yes.
So this really makes the whole Act as it is toothless and unenforceable.
Yes. Mm.
Aya ku page 5 bullet 3 ko yonke lo consultation ndibona bayenzeke kakuhle ndifuna nje ukwazi into ukuba ingaba isiphi ekupromotweni kwale ma-languages apha kwezikhos ngoku yenzeka loo nto i-progress iqhuba njani kulo mba page 5 bullet 3 from above. Page 11. Ndicela ukuba ukhe undicacisele mhlekazi uyibekile bona phaa ku bullet 2 from the top. Uzibekile ezaa zinto zikliye bendifuna ukuba ukundibekela uba njengaziphi as an example i-national public enterprises zake
ndimafokoenkosibonsexela ngabe khona onomva
after we come out of the budget review, where we observe that the department is exclusive as far as capacity and budget constraints. How much cost will be on this issue of the implementation of this budget to include all the equipment costs and also your personnel? Will we have enough funds to roll out the principal when it comes to implementation?
Okay, is there another member? Which one?
Thank you, Chairperson. On page 12, it's a slightly second question for me. I need more pecking than the way it is here. Bullet number 2, describe how the department or entity will communicate with members of the public where their language of choice is not an official language of such a department. And I'm checking if we're still referring to the same country, because if we are, there may not be any need of this particular system.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to find out why on Section 6 they spoke about the national and provincial government, but why not local government? Thank you.
Again.
Yeah. Oh. Thank you, Chair.
like to use to establish the National Language Unit. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, but I also want to emphasize on the issue of local government. Why is it left out on the bill? As it is also an organ of government as well. But also the question 7 is already spoken about. But one of the issues I want to raise as well is the issue of I think it's the page 6 on the bill itself, which speaks about the regulations on section 14 with pencils, you know, to say that you make a regulation, you know, and if you can just unpack that a bit with me, because if you with pencils at this current stage, is it possible? I know I'm asking a question that is not even linked to the bill, but I'm just checking of the reality of it, because it will still come back to us at the end of the day. So we must be careful. We must clean that site first. I'm very concerned, even to the chief law advisors, like Payagla organization. So it's one of the questions I thought I should raise right now, because that means you have to fix all that damage first. Because if you're going to monitor, you're going to regulate within that state of collapse, I thought it's a concern that I should raise from my side as well. Yes, I could like feeling what I have said, which is the Ashana.
Thanks, Chair.
You look stressed, Jay. Is it the bill? You don't look yourself. You usually smile, or is it the bill?
No, I'm fine, thanks.
Okay. I will get you coffee. You'll appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
Okay. That's Bushe. Also, Bushe. That's Bushe, our committee assistant. Please, gentlemen, don't look at her like that, please. Very, very young. Please. She's very young, so don't look at her like that, please. Okay, please, she can.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks for those questions. Firstly, maybe let me start by addressing some of the issues relating to the way the bill works. You'd recall, Chair, that this is not the first intervention when it comes to the promotion of the use of languages. We've got PANSAL, whose responsibility it is to promote the use of a variety of languages, some of them, in fact, not official languages in the country. Now, what this bill tries to do is to place an obligation that the public can actually hold every department accountable to which languages it is going to, I mean, the public can actually do business with in that department. Now, the reason why it becomes therefore important for the minister in promulgating regulations to consult with PANSAL is such that there is consistency between what PANSAL is doing in the promotion of languages and what the minister is promulgating as regulations in terms of this bill. Now, I am confident, Chair, that we are addressing the problems at PANSAL, and we will have a PANSAL which is able to deliver on its mandate very soon. That work is ongoing. We're working together with the colleagues at PANSAL in ensuring its functionality, and so we believe that it is going to be feasible and it is going to be possible for the minister to consult meaningfully with PANSAL. There are a number of questions which relate to whether the bill is going to be implementable. Chair, I mean, obviously there are financial implications which are linked to the implementation of the bill, both for ourselves as a department, as well as all departments and public entities. However, I do think, Chair, that there's a perhaps a question that we ask ourselves is, what is the cost currently which is related with the absence of such a bill? Because until you have determined your languages of doing government business, anybody can approach you in any language, and they've got a right as a citizen to be served in that particular language. Now, once you've made a choice in terms of your national of your language policy for each department and entity, you are able to give guidance to people, which means that what is currently an ad hoc cost to the department becomes much more plannable and becomes much more manageable. So, in a sense, we believe that the impact of the bill is actually going to help departments to plan more appropriately for dealing with multilingualism in their business. But also, Chair, you'd recall that in the background, we gave some of the things that we're doing, and I'm sure Dr. Suleiman is going to speak a lot more on this. Part of what the National Language Service in the department does is actually to help and advise, as well as do translation for other departments. So there is a service which is currently available in the Department of Arts and Culture to help the rest of government with translation services. Dr. Suleiman can speak about the level of translation that is being done in the NLS, the amount that comes in from the department, and the assistance that is given there. Anil, I don't know if you want to respond to some of the legal questions around the bill together with Masiam.
Thank you, and honorable members. Thank you, DG. The bill. Let me just maybe say a lighthearted story, which reflects a nice way of understanding the richness of the linguistic diversity of our country. I don't know if you watch a television program called Idols, which is about talent, and people come on that TV show and they have to sing, and then they decide whether they're going to be picked or not. Last year there was a young man who came onto the show, and he said, and he was going to sing, and he said, "My name is Vusi Setoli. I'm going to sing." And so he sang, and he did well. And after that, they asked him the question. So, what do you do, Vusi? And he said, "Well, I'm selling cigarettes and sweets, etc., in the township." So Garrett Cliff, one of the judges, said to him, "Oh, so are you a vendor?" He says, "I'm a Zulu." So I think that is something that reflects the richness of the linguistic diversity of the country. To deal with Honorable Lottrick's question, firstly the chair's question, the criteria to be identified. The practice is that the provinces have languages that dominate the business. For example, in KwaZulu-Natal, it's isiZulu and English. The previous versions of the bill had the principle whereby we would not look at rotating the languages, but it will come about the fact that one of the complaints made was that there is an over-dominance of English, and that is what we are trying to prevent. That English becomes the super language. So the idea is to give effect to the minority populations in the provinces, etc., but the criteria will be what is in actual fact the practical languages that are used. That is one of the criteria. Then the mechanisms to enforce compliance with the bill from the other departments. Ma'am, we have grappled with this approach of trying to use mandatory language, and the language used in the bill is that the national departments and the entities must comply and etc. But the idea is that everyone has a duty to advance multilingualism, because it is a constitutional difficult to say that you must now introduce punitive measures to compel the department, and if the departments fail, then you want to punish them for that. When we passed the Promotion of Access to Information Act, it was similar kind of thing. The people had to comply with the Promotion of Access to Information Act published in manual. These are all the challenges that we face, but the department's view is that we would rather try to encourage this compliance. Then regarding the exemptions, it is correct that at this stage the terminology in the Act is vague. What we will do in the regulations is to stipulate detailed criteria for what exemptions apply. What it simply means is that the Act talks about the entities and departments creating a unit, but where they have capacity constraints and resources, then they would actually be able to have a senior manager in charge of that particular place that will be able to make the policy available, etc. So the costing is very important, but I think that the department is not going to look lightly at these requests for exemptions and say simply that people want to run away from their constitutional responsibility and obligation. Then I think the DG addressed the issue of the cost. The bill is expensive, and that is the reason why probably it was turned back in 2004 because of the cost implications. And then we were said that we should use non-legislative means. But unfortunately, the Constitutional says it's legislative and. So we cannot get away from that responsibility. The other questions, I think that... Local government is important, but the Constitution makes the obligation only applicable to national and provincial government. And this bill, remember, is in terms of Schedule 4, where the provinces can pass their own language policies and make their own language act. And this bill is going to be a kind of guiding light for those provinces that have not yet have the language policy or language legislation. I think there are two provinces that already have that. But local government is important. I think we'll use other mechanisms such as cooperation with local government. We've got the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act that can look at mechanisms whereby we encourage through SALGA cooperation from the municipalities, because I think the municipalities are the service delivery coalface, and that is where there has to be. But the provisions of that for this bill is that we can do certain things through the bill, but there will be other things that we will have to do through non-legislative means, and one of them is inviting cooperation from them. The National Language Unit, what we have in the National Department is the National Language Service. So, ma'am, when we go through the line-by-line bill with the bill later on, we'll probably amend that section which talks about the National Language Service in the department as opposed to National Language Unit in the government, because we already have what is the National Language Service here. And the DG is correct that the PANSELV is our partner, strategic partner, and the regulations will be made by the government, by the department, but we will consult with PANSELV on practical aspects insofar as how they are to be. I think I've said a mouthful. Thank you.
Dr. Soman, if you could please deal with some of the things which are raised by the criteria which are in the international policy framework of the Act, responding to some of the questions around the criteria for the tourists and all of those.
I think that when it comes to the, I'll deal with the language policies first, the criteria in terms of how you actually decide what languages you are going to use. I think Mr. Singh has mentioned the fact that it is very important to also look at what is preponderant, what is the language that is spoken by the majority of the people in the area. Obviously, it has to be an official language. And then, of course, to implement that depends depending on the functions of the unit, you also have to take into account the budget that you have, because you cannot really cater for every language that is spoken in the area. And another thing you have to take also into account is the nature of the business that government department does, because they're not the same. For instance, you're not going to impose that requirement on DPSA, who does not necessarily have anything to do as much with the public. But perhaps you might want to do that with the Department of Health, or the Department of Local Government, or the Department of Housing, or the Department of Water Affairs, or municipality, things like that. So the criteria will not necessarily be the same for everybody. So you're looking at, if you are implementing a policy, any policy for that matter, it's just a question of the budget you can cater for, what the nature of the business you're doing, where you're sitting, what the demographics look like of the languages that are spoken. Now, when it comes to Limpopo, for example, you do have more languages occurring than just what we tend to think about, Xitsonga, Tshivenda, Sepedi, English, Afrikaans. There you sit with the consultation of the people deciding what languages the government will be using. If you come into the Department of Health, you may not have to pick and choose, but it also depends what is needed for, what is the demand of that language is saying. If you're going to be needing interpreting who speaks what, that's what it is. But the policy, of course, will always have a loophole, because then up until you enforce it, you try to see if it's working, then that's another thing. And I'm looking at, for instance, other languages that are beginning to manifest, like your French and your Lingalas and your people that are in the community that need services. And constitutionally, you know, these people also have rights because they are in the country. So are you as a government and a provincial government going to afford to do your interpreting for those patients in French, in Lingala, and all those? Up until now, the policy caters for official languages. So those are the kind of things. Now, when it comes to language units, again, cabinet prioritized 10 departments to say the rest will follow in time, to establish language units, and those are the ones that deal directly with the people. Your health, your education, your water affairs, land affairs, housing, those kinds of departments. Again, you come to budget. That's why I think Mr. Singh is trying to clarify that, yes, Professor Lotriet, you might want the thing to enforce, you know, an act like this to say you are going to do this. Then issues of budget in any policy also come to play. Where the people are sitting, you know, and can they really afford this? But we have a way around that. So in terms of establishing a language unit, that criteria again will be determined about who needs the services, because as Mr. Singh is saying, it's all about ensuring that people do receive services in languages that they prefer. And then we have to distinguish between government communicating with the people and government doing government business. So it's like a T-frame. Again, there you decide. And like you have a consultative process to say what language are you going to use here, what language is going to help government do it efficiently. What languages do people get to receive? So when government is taking the service to the people, communicating with the people, there is no doubt. You are going to use, again, your official languages, and it depends where you are. And, of course, the languages must be the 11 official languages. In my experience of this policy in any country, though, it is not very many governments that can afford implementing such a policy in more than two languages most of the time, but 3 years. So depending on the budget, depending on where the people and what the demand is for that language in whatever area, it's not going to be same everywhere. DG, I'm not too sure if I've covered you. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Perhaps, Chair, let me just, if I could add two things. The Constitution makes it obligatory on national and provincial government to comply with the section of the Constitution. And on municipalities, it simply says that the municipality shall take note of the language of choice used in its locality. There is no obligation on local government. Secondly, Chair, I think it's important to also look at the fact that in the promotion of multilingualism, this is just one bill dealing with a specific issue of government business. There is other legislation that we are currently working on, which deals with capacity for the implementation of this bill and the implementation of principles of multilingualism and creating a profession around languages in the country. Because one of the binding constraints in the implementation of this bill is likely to be capacity. Where are language practitioners? Where do we get them? How do we authenticate the work that is done in that particular area of work? I mean, there's a whole range of things around that. So it's important to see this bill in that context, that it's just one instrument which we are using. There's a whole range of other instruments. Some already exist, some are in the making. Then thirdly, just to clarify, I think it was Honorable Chakal, who asked the question about public enterprises. Eskom, for instance, would be a public enterprise. It's government-owned companies, the Eskoms, the Transnet, and so forth. And there was also a question about the section of the Act that deals with, I mean, the requirement in the Act that a language policy of a department shall clarify how to deal with people whose language of choice is not necessarily an official language for that department. The Act says every department shall choose at least two languages. Let's make an example. If a department decides that their language is going to be Afrikaans and isiZulu, or in fact, I think it's the Western Cape which has chosen three, English, Afrikaans, and Xhosa. But if I want to come and I want to be served in Xitsonga, that policy shall then clarify how that is going to work and what assistance can be rendered to a person who wants to be served in a language other than the languages of choice for that particular department. That is what the requirement on the bill is. Thanks, Chair.
I think the answer that started hitting me up. I'm looking at I've gone already to the Act now, because if you read the objectives of the Act, that they speak about to facilitate equitable access to service, you know, and all that, and equitable treatment. Those are the other objectives of this Act that I hear. You see, I understand. Yeah, we are the objective also of this bill. Part of it is to address the past, obviously, the apartheid past in terms of languages. You know, you see, when you say government business, I become worried, because I wonder, like, well, are you saying that government to government business does it not involve the people? On what the doctor has said, does it not involve the people? Because that's what she just answered now. So I should say, if you are not doing government business, then you cannot understand that the language that government does business with. But secondly, I know we're colonized with this language, that's why it still maybe dominates some issues, but this is what we need to address. But secondly, you see, you cannot choose departments. Maybe it's my analysis. When I was still in the International Relations Committee, we were saying certain government languages like the PSA, you can only use English because they don't speak to the people. I think that's where the problem starts. Every government department speaks to the people of South Africa. That's what I believe in. The people are saying, DG, they don't have any interest in the issues of international relations because it's never interpreted in any of their languages, even if it's one African language, indigenous language, because they wouldn't understand what exactly is happening when it comes to international issues. I think I have a challenge We understand that demographics of those provinces will apply obviously to the bill. But in every province, there will be a third language that must be added, because English and Africans are always dominant. That is a fact that we cannot run away from. So you cannot say two, because obviously it will always be English and Africans. I've just made a little graph here in all these areas in South Africa that we live in. You find that it's mostly these English. The only problem, I think there's no problem really with my analysis, it's KZN, because what is more spoken there is English and this is Zulu, more than any other languages. But as I said, I was raising the Limpopo issue. As much as there are other languages, now we have to speak about the Constitution of the Republic. As much as there are other languages, but Limpopo, obviously, there are those five major. In fact, it's four. I find English more or less in Limpopo. Africans is more of a spoken language than English in Limpopo. And then you have your Tshivenda, your Xitsonga, and what's the other one? Sipedi. And these are the realities I thought I should raise. This is also to address public service delivery teachers. It gets frustrating. You come to a province here, in the Western Cape, like Xhosa is mostly spoken as African language. A person comes, you speak, they say, I can't speak Xhosa, I can't speak, I can only speak English and Afrikaans. Then the person turns back because nobody is willing to help him or her in the language that she speaks on. DPSA, you cannot say we clean out. You go to the DPSA. Most of the adverts are in English. And it's a government department. We also want to read our adverts in our own languages. So we cannot say we're leaving DPSA out. Secondly, you go to DPSA website. It confuses you if you don't understand English. Even me, myself, I wish it was in school, because some of these issues, they say press here, press here, and press here. And the language that is used is very... Imagine for an illiterate person who would go into internet wanting to understand what DPSA is about, you know, because you see, let's not segment government to government business from the people. I think that's where the problem starts, because if we are going to use that language, that government to government is a business, we have a problem. Then you are saying that your government to government business is not applying to the people of South Africa. That's what you are saying. But secondly, you see, this notion that the only time languages are spoken is when in Bizo. That's why now people must be understood in their languages, because it's an imbizo. You know, I think that's where I have a problem. Some of the questions now, DJ, about this, people are saying, the bill is coming. I know public wrong hearings are not out, but people must be always informed. They would want to also get the bill in their own languages, because we as MP, we come there, we speak in English. They don't even understand what are we saying, you know, because they would like to also respond in their languages and say, as this. So these are the challenges. And I understand the issue of cost implications that we are raising. Unfortunately, here we can't amend the constitution right now, but the problem, we've got our national and provincial government, but the most problems come to local government, because that's where the people are dealing on daily issues with those people. I don't know how can we... So what we can do, as I said, is an issue of the constitution. I can't read my writing now. Okay. I can remember. Did I hit you up now? Oh, okay. Okay. Honorable Dapane, welcome. Honorable Dapane, he's a member of the committee, he's a member of the UDM. Thank you for joining us. Honorable Lotrit.
Chair, thank you very much, and I'm very glad that you raised these issues, because that was also one of my overriding concerns when reading the bill, and that is, are we really promoting multilingualism with this bill? And my problem is, as you have stated, that the whole issue of at least two, because it is, I know from experience and that's why we have the language situation we have at present, and why people are not happy, is that government tends to opt for the least and not for what people really require. And we will run into a situation where we'll have a situation where we will have Afrikaans and English, or just only English and Zulu, and what about the rest? And I think with this bill there is an opportunity to really promote multilingualism in this country as the Constitution envisaged. Now, I know the constitutional or the Constitution also refers to at least two, but I think within this bill, it should be stated in such a way that at least two is the absolute exception, and that is not the fallback or the default position taken by different departments. Otherwise, we're not going to get to a point where we have parity and equal treatment of our languages. And I know the cost thing is always very problematic, but I would like to put the question the other way around. What is the cost of not having access because of your language? I think there's a cost that perhaps is difficult to calculate, but if people cannot have access in their languages to the services they require, I think there is a very large cost that this country incurs of people not getting the services that they actually need. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Duncan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Ek is inderdaad opgewek met die insette wat u gelewer het. En ek praat juist nou Afrikaans om te stipuleer dat hierdie departement is veronderstel om seker te maak dat ons praat van nasiebou en samehorigheid. En ek dink dat die taal speel 'n belangrike rol in ons gemeenskap. So I want to make it easier for everybody in the meeting, Chairperson, to make it clear that in the absence of our Honourable Minister here today, and I want to highlight he should have been here today. This is an important meeting. There's a court order out to make sure that this bill is enacted. And at this point in time, I truly believe that asking questions to the ministry, to the department today, as far as I'm concerned, please excuse me, is quite irrelevant. In the sense that I do believe that we are now at a stage where we're calling for public hearings to ensure that there is an act. And I also do believe that any policy or strategy that is out will not have teeth because it is not based on an act that is that gives that regulatory power to actually see that things are implemented. Let alone PANPAL that is also failing as an institution that also did not together with the ministry and the department ensuring that this act or this bill had preference over almost everything else. Then I also want to highlight that costing is always an excuse from government throughout the country, and I would want to believe the reason why they use this as, you know, Chairperson, if I just weigh it up against all the irregular expenditure, the wasteful expenditure, and all of that money, then I cannot see why certain bills and certain acts cannot have preference and see that our people at least get the benefit of it. These are just remarks. I really do not have any questions. However, I will fully participate during the public hearings, and I do believe that the public hearings will reveal to us what the shortcomings within this act is, and I also do believe that us as a committee will also be committed to give our input, and I know that Ms. Lottrick has already gave quite a number of input from her side. So, Chairperson, I think that would be my input. It might sound negative, I'm positive, but I need to say I'm very, very unhappy with the fact that the minister is not here and the fact that this act or this bill has been prolonged since maybe even before 2004. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable. Thank you. I've never seen you like that. Honorable. Mushwena?
Chairperson, can I make an answer? Man, one of the questions I have to end up with. I was like trying to go into this thing. Like, yeah. That's where we're going, and it's a good thing. And I think I loved it. So I was like trying to, you know, we must not imagine things. We're seated here with all these languages, and we can do it right now. What I wanted to say is that, you see, I don't understand where in the proposal you talk of a minority language. You can talk of my language because I understand dominant group language. But when you come to minority language, is there a minority language? That's like, because if you, you if there are languages that are taken as minority on their own, it means it's misleading. What we're discussing here is very much misleading. And we don't have to start from that note if we want to debate this thing to the benefit of this country, the whole of this country. Such that, yes, there are 11 languages to the best of my knowledge in this country, plus sign languages. But the example that was given already was like French, and I realized that the rest were not even talking of languages so that are spoken in this country. Because if we are talking of the 11 languages as per the Constitution, I don't know for French is as an example. As somebody gave an example of French of all languages. So I realized that we may not be dealing with challenges that are going to help South Africans, but challenges that will help a lot of people. Are we going to nationalization?
Okay, but now you're doing my language. Oh. Okay. Going to cut.
I have paid for you. Who let it clean? You know, one of the lamb of a body. This is a couple Madunga Nalama language unit. A member of the established of Fire Flamas Department. And if you know,
I just want to make a comment once again on this government business. In the last meeting I had with you, if we speak about this issue of this bill, even to provinces, okay, let's be realistic. Yeah, there are some provinces that don't speak other languages. That we understand very well. And you might have in quite number of those people, like you go to the Northern Cape, they speak Afrikaans, Setswana. That's the most, those are the two dominant languages. We can't be wasting money to pray. Oh, in the process, we have a you can't be doing isiZulu booklet in the Northern Cape as much as you cannot do isiTswana booklet in the Eastern Cape. None of those we understand. You see, my problem, I think also the language that we speak, we must start with ourselves. The only time when it comes to minority languages is our African languages. Then you would say the better ones are this. This is in the back of the minds of the people. I know we have not gone for public hearing. For this bill to them, it's a victory. The last meeting I had with you was also towards DPSA. Most people here even complain, even starting here from the Eastern Cape. All groups, not only all language groups except English speaking people. People are saying, we are failing interviews. Because not because we are dumb, but because we can't express ourselves in the languages that we want. Here in Parliament, I've been approached by young people who are working here, who always say, I've been here, I'm just making it the same because I'm so that people can understand. In Parliament for a long time, I go to the interviews, I know the answers, but my problem is that I cannot respond, not that I can't speak English, but I cannot express myself. I was telling these members last week, I went to Lutuli House. We did interviews. This lady was from KZN, very educated, with a master's degree. But as I'm saying, she was quiet, and I wanted to, and then asked, what is the problem? She never said anything. I said, you want to speak to your own language? She said, yes. And then she said, speak in Zulu, because all the interviewees could speak Zulu. She was just flowing like that, in her own language, you know. So that is at the back of the mind of people right now. When I'm angry, I can't speak English. Make me angry now. Born without dealing now with cause. And this is Zungubanova Utin. So I think this bill comes as a preamble, not only for it comes before, but for many issues as well. How many of you, when you're angry, speak in English? Have you seen fighting with a white person or speaking English as bank? You're expressing yourself. So these are some of the issues I thought we because if government that uses it, the problem is that people think that it's only the responsibility. Yes, the major department is the issue is the national culture, the national our department. But we are the ones who must. Now who is that? Is that a song for me for my birthday? Okay. Can we put our phones on silent, please? If it's an old one, there's got no silent, just switch it off. So I'm just trying to give you the spec of where are we going. This is what we are going to get. That's why even government imbeciles, they are not full to capacity. Let's be honest. The reason people say you come there to present something to us in English, even the services that we're thinking about, in English, no. Because now call out the requirements, you speak, we mix English and those people are cannot hear you. So I thought this is a good bill. This is a good one. But also, one of the questions that I would ask is how is due related to province? What? Okay, provinces might not report, but they've got a responsibility of ensuring that this bill is applying in the provinces as well, because they deal more directly with people. That's why I'm still saying it's unfortunately a constitutional issue on the issue of local government. Provinces as well need to come on board. I think the Western Cape has started. Is it only the Western Cape? Now, yeah. Oh, don't make the thing smile, please. Which are the provinces? Look. I don't believe this. So, those. Okay, which have started that issue? So those are some of the issues that I think we should highlight. Because me and my issue, I become African biased on this issue. She's from the Bergen. I've never seen a closer advert on the Bergen. Or am I lying? Why it's not only African people who are reading the Bergen. I also read it when my name is there. Exactly, Marek, yes. So I thought these are some of the issues that we will just raise. Okay. I'm not worried. You are not smiling today. What?
It's the picture. No, Chair.
Sorry. I wonder why Chair is so concerned that he's not smiling. Because I always keep on smiling.
Honorable, you don't have a budget. Well, the man who controls the budget, you must look at him.
Thanks, Chair. I really appreciate the discussions that the committee is having, because I think we're beginning to cut to really the meat behind the bill. And Chair, in draft of the bill, I think there are two things that we've had to grapple with and try and balance. One is the principle, the constitutional principle of multilingualism. And the other one is cost and practicality. In an ideal situation, every department should be able to do business amongst different departments, but also with the public, in all 9 official languages, in an ideal situation. But the truth of the matter is that is not going to be practical. Just an example that we have used here, of interviews. If we were to allow that, anybody could come to an interview and request to be interviewed in the language of their choice. Clearly, that's got very little to do with the language unit in a department. It affects everybody who works in that department. And that's the practical part of it. That it's simply not going to be practical to do that from a cost point of view, from a skills point of view, from a whole range of practical reasons. Now, what then do we do? What we do is that we are saying to the department, make a choice. Given a public obligation that we will serve you in anything that we do with you, we will serve you in one of these, in any of these languages. Now, the Act says at least two, which means that the choice may be two, the choice may be three or four. In all probability, most departments will go for two, for the sake of practicality and cost. The truth of the matter, Chair, is that this is not a new thing. There are many departments that actually do business in modern language. The Department of Justice is one such department. They do business in a whole range of languages. If you go to court, you can request an interpreter who would be able to ensure that you are served in a language of your choice. So there are things that government has been doing and has done in order to promote this. But what do you do? What commitment, what public commitment do you make in order to ensure that you meet this commitment? And really, that lies at the heart of what we are trying to balance here. Practicality as well as the principle of multilingualism. Added to that complexity change, the fact that currently this bill applies only to national government. The provinces make their own choices. They develop their own language policy. And that's where they make their choices. Some provinces have done that. A lot of provinces, I think about six provinces, have got draft language policies which they are still consulting with public, with their public on, and they are in the process of finalizing that. Well, that process is going, they are going to take their own decisions in this regard. But even public departments, I mean national departments, sorry, national departments are structured very differently. There are departments that have got regional and local, and district offices all over the country. I mean, if I may make an example, and this is just an example, the Department of Home Affairs. You've got offices all over the country. How do you make that particular choice of your Department of Home Affairs? And you interact on a daily basis directly with the public. That's the kind of complexity that we are trying to help departments to deal with without compromising service delivery. Because the truth of the matter is that if we are not acting in a responsible manner, we could grind service delivery to a halt just by imposing standards that department cannot possibly meet. If you say to department, serve in any language of anybody's choice, and somebody walks into the Department of Home Affairs in Pietermaritzburg and demands to be served in Shivenda. That becomes, but Chair, that's the reality of what we're dealing with. And the truth of the matter is that there are people who are sitting like that, and they will do it. And that's the practicality of what we're trying to balance here. Let's do something that can be possible, something that is going to be helpful, but something, I mean, in a sense, it's baby steps towards a full multilingual, society as well as public service that serves the society, and that is what we are trying to balance through this bill.
Yes, sir. I think I'm going to interject. I think the most concern when it comes to the issue of two languages, I want you to understand, is our issue finding ourselves those two becoming English and Africans. I think that's where the problem is. More than anything, that is where you'll find it goes. Let me be honest, our people, some of them, let me say all of them, are still thinking, even our own African people still think English and Africans are the very good languages. I was listening to one program on TV about languages. Our own black people are saying that if my child cannot speak English, then she's useless. We speak English in the house. I don't know whether we listened to our debate in the, what was the debate, by the way, Onamuloto, the one that I raised, the revitalization of indigenous languages. Those are some of the issues that we are raising, because when we go to public hearings, even provinces will tell you, they will find that people, the same people who are complaining about language, will be saying English and Africans. So
So that's where my main issue is. Unless you say, okay, but unless you say in the bill, one must be an African language, I think maybe that will assist us. I thought that's because really, Mr. Singh, you'll find all yourself doing the bill again, because it will be English and African. Unless you say one must be an African indigenous language, you know. You see, and there we must also be careful even to say, if you say one must be indigenous language, because remember, Africa is an indigenous language, you know. Where are the Afrikaners? No offense, am I lying? It is an indigenous language. So you will find yourself, because you say, if you don't say African, because Africans will find themselves back there. I'm not again, but I'm saying you'll find that English will always be a problem. But we will find ourselves going there and back. Unless we say African language, indigenous African language, then maybe I can be appeased where I'm sitting here. No, I thought maybe I should clarify that, because on the issue of two languages, we're not saying that we have a problem with those two languages, but we'll go back again, coming back here to say that you still have those two, English and African, which are still a problem. This is what we're trying to address. I think that's my issue where the, now the amendment may be made. I don't know what the members do, can. Okay, did you?
No, Chair, I would fully agree with that. That, I mean, perhaps we do need to do a bit more than that, because it may just be an easy crop up to say Africa. The intention, really, Chair, in fact, in discussing this with the team in the department, one of the things that we debated quite a bit was in such a bill, I mean, how do we balance that development of indigenous African languages in such a bill? What's the practical way in which it can be done? So that you are able to expand service delivery without necessarily just allowing departments to sort of take sort of escape routes. I mean, clearly, that would lack goodwill. That would be malicious compliance, so to speak, Chair. And I do think that perhaps in the process of discussing with the public during the hearings, we may want to find a way of introducing that to the bill. But I do take, the concern is one which is well taken, Chair.
Okay.
Just to add that we have, with the old friends at the State Law Advisor, they have agreed, or they are busy translating this bill in all official languages, and then the department will promulgate that once the translation comes.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I just want to also say to our DG that I do believe that there is quite a number of practical challenges that we do have. But I again say that in the face of unemployment faced by our youth in our country, why don't we take the opportunity to ensure that they are skilled? We do not have enough interpreters, not in government, not in private sector. There's opportunity in all of this. So I again want to say that nothing must be seen as, you know, just challenges. Challenges in government mean problems. We need to revive and become excited about the fact that we actually have so many young people out there. We have matriculants who doesn't have a job. They're wandering around. They get involved in drug abuse. They get involved with almost just about everything that is part of the problem. So let us take the opportunity, and I would want the department to look at things like that, you know, and see to draw closer to the mindset of skills development. We must eat and sleep it. If we look at the national list, Chairperson, of skills development, skills that is currently needed in our country, it is scary. So here's an opportunity in this department to pick up this challenge. Thank you.
Thanks. On what Honorable Duncan is saying, I think in what would be, that's when now also council will become on board on this issue as well. But any other members? Honorable Moss? Is your hand up? Oh, hold on. Okay, can I have Honorable Moss and Honorable Manbunda? Honorable Musan? You still have to present again the piece? Are you still going to present? Oh, I thought you wanted to go to the depth of that. Oh, no, you're done. Okay. Okay.
Thanks, Chair. I think to start with Honorable Duncan is saying on the issue of the skills. I think if we check on the last time when we have the annual report of the department, they talk about the bursaries that they is giving to students. And to come with that, I think maybe for the future, they must check those bursaries they give for those young ones, maybe also to look at those people get for to promote English languages, the studies that they have locally. Secondly, Chair, I want to check on the issue of the establishment of the intergovernmental forums to promote this issue of this language, but and also to coordinate and to cooperate with the department. Will the minister put me in as establishing forums? And if so, what will be the criteria of that establishment of that forum? And also, this forum must be full-time or will it be part-time? And where will this forum actually allocated to? That's it, President. Thank you very much. Those are my questions.
Thank you, Honorable Mawunda.
Yes. Chairperson, I also want us to go along with the department, assisting each other. In the interpretation of the bill itself, it might be. Let me use the word. Might be difficult. In the sense that there are those who have got this, legal opinion, legal understanding. The law as it is. But when I look upon the one of the this Mr. Lawrence concerns, I mean bulletin number 3, where he emphasized that the parliament should be ordered to publish all legislation in all languages, and adding also retroactively to 1996. And when I check also on the comment maybe, you find out that there is no constitutional provision that imposes the translation obligation on Parliament. But now, is it this that it needs, more of the explanation, how is it going to be dealt with in relation that when the bill now become an act, will it be possible for the department also, will it be possible to Parliament to give order to the department to say, we'd like to see all those things be translated into all official languages? I'm just trying to check if ever the possibilities are there. Taking into consideration what has just been explained by the DG and let me not quote, maybe I'll not be saying correctly, but the cost effect thereof. And all those things need to be reconciled in any way before we could say we take this bill or this act forward. Because in terms of the practicality itself, well, it might not be impossible, it might find it difficult in terms of the cost that has been already undertaken by the DG. But hence I'm saying let's try to invite each other's mind correctly. Maybe we can go along and say this is the way we think we should persuade this, in order that it should not also stand again on our way to say somebody coming and say, no, you haven't met the constitutional obligation because you haven't done 1, 2, 3. But on the other hand, the possibilities of meeting such obligations from the department or from the parliament itself, you find it is not that easy. But how do we reconcile the two so that we can go together? I'm just saying let's try to look into that together. Even before the other stakeholders come out and say, what about that, what about this, who wanted to be like this, and so on and so on. Bearing in mind the examples that you have given, also from yourself, Chair, where you find out in one province or in one area, there are more than 3, you know, spoken languages. How do we reconcile also into that? Let's invite all our minds and try to find a good way to adopt that. Chair, thanks.
Thank you, Mabunda.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to acknowledge that I hear the concerns of the Chair and the committee members, because my sense is also that the bill simply endorses the status quo and doesn't give effect to Section 6, which envisages that we should enhance Indigenous languages. There's no obligation anywhere in the bill. But I have two questions in addition to that. Clause 4 of the bill, 4.1, says that within 18 months of the commencement of the Act, or such further period as the Minister may decide, the national government must adopt a language policy regarding the use of official languages for government purposes. Now, I want to know if who is envisaged as the national government to provide a language policy, because in the definition, national government is where we now means national departments, national public entities, and national public enterprises. So it's not quite clear who must adopt this policy. So that is quite wide. And then also, I think clause 4 actually limits what the constitution envisages in section 6.3, because it limits the use of two languages, or the minimum of two languages, to be used for government purposes and not for all purposes. And then just one last question. On page 9 of the memorandum to the Act, number 5, implications for provinces, it says here that all government structures, national, provincial, and local governments, as well as institutions exercising a public power or performing a public function in terms of legislation, will be bound by this Act when enacted. And I don't see that the Act actually binds these entities mentioned. So just clarity on that.
Thanks, Advocate. Ms. Lopes, are you fine for now? Advocate Dapane, why are you so quiet today?
There's attending more than 1 minute, of attending more than one meeting in the same day. That is disadvantage. My mind is still in the meeting I'm coming from.
Then you're coming to close in my meeting?
No.
Okay. Did
you? Yes, Chair. Thanks. I had mentioned earlier on that this is but just one instrument which we are using to promote multilingualism. Certainly, there's space for the Basra program to be used to create skills for the implementation of multilingualism, not just in this bill. There is the language practitioners legislation which we're still dealing with and hoping to introduce it next year. There's a whole range of other supporting mechanisms to this, and I do agree that we language units within the different departments to deal with coordination. That can be managed. That would be managed probably by the national language unit in the Department of Arts and Culture. But also, Chair, I think it's important to remember that the provinces are still going to go through a very similar thing like that. I always shudder when I think about such a process for Gauteng, where basically every official language is used, perhaps some more than others, but basically every similar program, language in the country is used. But we would love to use the intergovernmental fora to give support to those to provinces as well. Regarding the questions about the language policy, each department is and public entity and public enterprise is expected to have its own language policy. There is the language policy framework, which is the policy framework for the country. Now, each department would have to prescribe its own language policy, which language it's going to use, and that is hence the use of the word national government in section 4. National government must adopt a language policy. That is each department and each public entity and public enterprise. Perhaps the legal language could be improved there, but that's the implication. And then I don't know if you want to add.
I think you've covered that point, DG. I don't think I need to add anything. But we will fix the memorandum on the objects, the one that talks about that. I'm just talking to my colleague, the state law advisor. Thank you.
Members, are all your questions answered? Who is not answered? Gwen, go to call. I think let's get some fresh tea because I can still look like that. I think it's a tribal war, so nothing I can do. Can I give you 10 minutes? I can see people are sleepy. I'm not sure they're just really affecting people even psychologically. I've never seen people on the so can we have the fresh tea outside? That's what.